Good afternoon. We would like to welcome you to the June 11th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes in new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a COA. Personal preferences will also not be the basis for any decision. Sign posting. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not properly posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or a board member who wishes to remove an item from consent agenda to the regular agenda?
Item number four.
Thank you, sir.
I'd also like to move item number 11 to the general agenda.
Okay. I will open the floor for a motion to approve the consent agenda. Items 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 12, and move items number 4 and number 11 to the top of the regular agenda. Do I have a motion?
I make a motion that we move items 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 12 to the leave them on the consent agenda. And move items 4 and 11 to the regular agenda.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. The motion on the floor is to move items number 4 and 11 to regular and approve the rest of the consent agenda. Is there a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. All those in favor? Any opposed? Consent agenda is approved with the moving of item 4 and 11. Moving on to the regular agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the agenda with the addition of items 4 and 11?
So moved.
Thank you, Mrs. Woodfield. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, we have a second from Mr. Helms. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The agenda is approved and is passed. Minutes from the previous meeting have been attached to the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the, what was that, the May 14th? Thanks. For the May 14th meeting?
I move to approve the minutes of the May 14th meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion to approve the minutes has been approved and is passed. This month, we don't have any items that have been requested to be removed from the final agenda. We have one item that is on the continued agenda. That is file number 2500-2575 COA for 219 York Street. Is there a motion to approve the continued agenda as presented?
Coleman, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion to approve the continued agenda has been approved and passed. Moving on to the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance or questions raised by this board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The board will then enter into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comments if you do not have any. If you are joining us and are a member of the public and wish to speak on an item, you should have received a speaker card and filled that out and given it to Ms. Bree, and she will give it to me, and I will call on you when your item is up for discussion. If you're joining us virtually, locate your control panel and use the raise your hand. I will be notified, and I will call on you for your comment. First item up on the agenda is item number four. The petition of Shaw Property Services, file number 25-002513 COA for 304 East Gwinnett Street, a fence.
So afternoon, this is Kelly. Again, this is for 304 East Gwinnett Street. The applicant is requesting approval for the installation of a fence around an existing parking lot at that address. The parking lot is currently being utilized by Kroger across the street. It's also within the Torin District. So as a reminder, Gwinnett Street is the border between districts. As it currently stands, three of the four street frontages for this lot already have a fence. The one remaining lot, the photo to my left, faces Gwinnett Street, so the applicant wants to place a fence in that area of the parking lot. According to the application, the applicant will install two black aluminum fences on each side of the parking lot landscape area, ensuring alignment with existing fencing while incorporating a two-rail top design due to material availability. The fence will be installed into the landscape ground with posts set into concrete. Unlike the existing fence, this installation will not include the round concrete curb beneath the fence. The fence will be 4 feet in height and be made of aluminum. So overall, staff found that this fence meets the standards and is visually compatible. And as a reminder, this board does not review landscaping and does not review sidewalks less than 5 feet in width in the public right-of-way. So with that, staff does recommend approval of the fence as requested because it does not meet the standards. Applicants should be online and they were notified that this will found would be pulled off consent.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff? Okay, thank you. Petitioner, are you with us and can you hear us?
Yes, I'm here. This is Jamie Malcolm.
Thank you, Jamie. I know that we're putting you on the spot a little bit because we moved you from consent agenda, but if you could just give us, you know, in your own words, an overview of your application, and then I'm sure we'll have a few questions for you.
Okay. So we are going to be installing a fence that is as close as what already exists at a 4 foot height to surround the parking lot, which is supposed to help with foot traffic and not going through the landscaping at the Kroger in that area. Do you need, what would you like, dimensions and everything, or it should be about 228 linear feet of fencing that will be going up in two different sections.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Malcolm. Does the board have questions for the applicant?
Woodfield, I have a question, please.
Sure.
Could you please clarify if the only ingress and egress is through the car area? Is there no pedestrian access through this fence?
There will not. We have not have a gate that can be opened in the proposal, no. But it would just lead them to go through the parking lot and, I guess, to the side, the pedestrian sidewalks, without just crossing over the landscape beds.
Woodfield again.
And there is a pedestrian sidewalk that would not be blocked. There wouldn't be a needed gate.
Woodfield again. So that's at the handicap parking area. There will be access from the parking lot to the sidewalk and the store.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then there is some space along the driveway for pedestrians to walk as well.
Yes. From what my understanding of what your question is, yes.
Yes. Good. Thank you.
Mr. Helms, I have just a quick clarification. The way I understand what you're planning on doing is you're planning on running a fence from the corner of Haversham and Gwinnett up to the pedestrian access to the parking, and then from the other side of the vehicle access to Lincoln Street. Is that correct?
Yes. Sorry, that is correct. They would only be able to use the crosswalks.
I have no problem.
I think Woodfield, again, if you could clarify, is there a fence between the handicap access and the driveway?
No, there would not be a fence between the handicap access.
So there'll be a 40 or foot section that has pedestrian access.
Yes, correct.
Good. Thank you.
Are there any additional questions for the petitioner? Okay, thank you, Ms. Malcolm. Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak? I do have one, Jim Hunsrucker. Please come forward and remember to state your name for the record.
Greetings. My name is Jim Hunsrucker. I am president of the Forsyth Park Community Alliance. In addition, I have been a neighbor of Kroger and its predecessor since 1991. Forsyth Park Community Alliance has been reporting to city staff issues with the store for the past 3 years. We have not been approached by Kroger about this change. The fence is to be installed. The lower 4-foot fence will help maintain the visual connection between the store and the parking lot. The landscaping has been an ongoing issue with the Kroger property. The landscape design, I know not purview here, but has struggled to match the original proposed design screening of the parking lot. The neighborhood has been promised landscaping improvements for many years. A landscape screening plan for the parking lot should be included in this proposal. Otherwise, the neighborhood can only honestly expect to see minimum mulch. Verbal promises have not resulted in visible results. The city council, as city council appointments, you're aware that city has delayed projects due to lack of community engagement. These drawings are incomplete, obviously, due to the questions by the board. Kroger is the highest valued grocery chain in America. Therefore, they might have to change to make adequate drawings. And during that time of producing real drawings, they might be able to come up with the neighborhood on a landscaping agreement. The other issue that we have with this change is that, as you can see, this is the entrance. I think this would be the handicap entrance. And this is the other sidewalk that would still be available to the public. We are concerned that the public is going to use the drives instead. There is not a crosswalk marking across each of the driveways on Haversham and Gwinnett Street, which we do recommend. The parking lot is 150 spaces. So imagine 150 carfuls of people using this parking lot during major events downtown. So all they're restricted to are the driveways and the little parked or crosswalks. I would we are grateful when Kroger makes meaningful improvements to their landscaping and when they encourage their customers to use their parking lot. Here's an example of not use of parking lot. This is actually an agreement back in 1993 that states the concern of the neighborhood with the landscaping. This was given to Kroger back in that year. So I ask that this be postponed approval until there's adequate drawings that represent how the curbing is going to be placed and how it's going to attach to the existing fence. And maybe during that time, we can come up with an adequate landscape design. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hunsrucker. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Hi. Okay. So I was just going to point out that this is a phase by phase project. Right now we're beginning with the fencing and all of that. And then after that, however Kroger decides to proceed with getting the landscaping put in and maybe some extra sidewalk paint and all that, we can do the sidewalk paint during this phase while we're there doing the fencing. But all the landscaping and all of that would be just a phase by phase job. You know, we're not presenting all of that during this permit to the board during this permit hearing. But yeah, any other questions we're willing to take as much as we can.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Malcolm. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
Nagel, no comment.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Thompson?
A worthwhile comment.
Thank you. Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
Woodfield, yes, I can see that there's some confusion about exactly where the fence is going and what the walkways are. It would be nice to have that clarified. But I see the fence acceptable. It's matching what's existing. And it's just blocking off the fourth side of the existing parking lot.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Helms?
My only comment is that I think that if you got 150 cars and the narrowness of this walkway, they're going to wind up changing this plan within a year. No comment other than that.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Hamer?
No comment.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. And just I'll add my comment for the public record that just so everyone is clear, landscaping and sidewalks and even egress and ingress points is a matter for a different city department, not our board. We're just reviewing the design standards and the visual compatibility of the fence. With that, I'll go around one more time. Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
No comment.
Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Ms. Hamer?
No comment.
Thank you. At this time, I will entertain a motion.
Rowan, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 25-00253-COA as requested because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. The motion on the floor is to approve the application as submitted. Do I have a second?
Second.
Helms, go ahead.
Mr. Helms with a second. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer? All right, the ayes have it. That petition is approved. Next item up on the agenda is item number 11, file number 25-002554COA for 331 Barnard Street, a swimming pool.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the project. So there is a request to install a swimming pool and hot tub at the rear of the or yard of the property located at 3331 Barnard Street. So just for some background, 331 Barnard Street was constructed in 1844 and is a three-story building with a rear two-story wing and raised basement frame building that encompasses the entire Southwest Trust lot on Pulaski Square, and it is a contributing resource. So here are some photos just kind of showing the site location. There's brick walls surrounding the property, just Sanborn map showing what had been there to what's there now. It has come to my understanding that the situation of the property where it is fenced in has been this way since circa 1960s era. So I'll just kind of show you what the existing site plan is. And then we have, let's try to get to this in a quick manner. All right. So existing site plan. And then we will get to the proposed, because I believe that is where our question lies. If I can get there. Okay. All right. Essentially, we had a question arise about the layout of this pool and ensuring that it was not encroaching on property outside of the property line, rather. So if we can get this to actually show the layout here. There we go. You see there's the site plan shows there's a property line that this fence apparently goes beyond, but as noted, this has been an existing condition for quite some time. And this is the area where it is. And with that, staff does recommend to approve the request for the installation of the swimming pool in the side yard at 331 Barnard Street as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. I will be happy to take any questions or turn it over to the applicants.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff?
Nagel? Yeah. Is this visible at all from the street?
It's not. It doesn't appear that it would be. We're just in the situation where we have been advised that we have to review all swimming pools. But
even
that's
if
why,
they're not visible at all.
Okay. That's why we've been putting them on consent usually, is because typically we don't have necessarily design standards, but we kind of just look at it's not going to affect the historic building or historic features. So. Yep. Anybody else?
Additional questions for staff?
Coleman here.
Mr. Coleman.
Yes. You made a comment about the possible encroachment on adjacent property. Has that been resolved, that this pool construction does not encroach on adjacent property?
I think, here, let me show you. This was a question that had came up in the pre-meeting, so I was just trying to show you where. There's a property line here, but apparently it's not that it's like an adjoining neighbor residence. It's the public sidewalk, it looks like. So, but it's been fenced in for quite some time.
Yeah, I was concerned that it was the adjacent property owner, not okay. The right of way.
Makes sense.
Are there additional questions for Caitlin? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Keith E. Broyles, me and my wife Lori are owners of the property, so the pool company is the petitioner, I suppose, but we are the property owners. And with respect to the wall, that is correct. The wall was, based on our historical research of the property, the wall was put in approximately 1969. I think one of the prior owners was the president of HSF, I think, that owned the property, that actually put in the wall where it exists today. We have not disturbed the wall other than to take some creeping fig off of it to, you know, do any kind of structural support that we need to for the wall. But the wall will not be disturbed as a result of the pool. It will exist and appear exactly as it does today and as it did when we purchased the property.
Thank you, Mr. Boyles. Are there questions for the applicant?
Actually, Helms, I have one quick question. To your knowledge, did they get approval from the city to build the wall where they built it?
I have no idea, Mr. Helms. That
was a while ago.
As far as I know, that's not an historical record, so I have no idea.
A while ago, okay.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Mr. Boyles. And I'm assuming you said you're Keith, so
yes.
you have the public comment card.
I wasn't sure if I needed to fill out a card or not.
Well, I appreciate you following procedure to the T.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
Yes, Woodfield. I know this is not a visual or historic issue for us to discuss on this board. We have no purview on this, but I do want to just point out for the record that it is not usually lawful to put a structure, and a pool is considered a structure, outside your property line. So we are not going to hold up, I don't think we'll hold up the review of this, but just want to make a note that, you know, as this moves forward through the process, that we see that this appears to be outside your property line. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Okay, I'm not going to go around a second time since we didn't have any material comments, but I will entertain a motion.
Rowan.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. The floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition. Sorry, I can't see. Thank you. 25-00-2554-COA as requested because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. The motion on the floor is to approve as is. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That application is approved as submitted. Next item up on the agenda is item number 16, the petition of J. Elder Studios, file number 25-001975 for a COA at 322 West Broughton Street.
Afternoon, this is Kelly again. So the applicant requests an approval of storefront alterations at 322 West Broughton Street. As you all may remember, this was heard last month. It was originally placed on consent last meeting, but the board pulled it over some concerns about the project. One of the major concerns from the board was the final proposed colors of the materials. And you asked for samples provided. These have been. I will pass those out in just one moment. There were no changes to the overall design, so everything else is appropriate, and staff did find proposed colors to meet the standards. So with that, staff does recommend approval of the proposed work as requested. And then if y'all have any questions, I'll pass out the samples as well.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for staff on this one? Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, everyone. Jerome Alder with J. Elder Studio. I'm glad to let you all know that the samples did arrive. They took a bit, but they did. And I hope that helps you understand the color a bit better. There is more maroon. Sorry that the rendering was a little too red. But we are looking forward to hopefully getting your approval so that we can move forward with the storefront rehabilitation and slight alteration.
Thank you, Mr. Elder. Are there questions for the petitioner?
Hamer here. Hi. I just had a quick question. In this most recent package, I noticed that you'd added awnings onto the elevation.
Oh, the awnings aren't part of this submission.
Okay. So. Gotcha. Thank you.
Were there additional questions for the petitioner? All right. Thank you, Mr. Elder. I don't have any public comment cards on this one, so at this time we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
Other than the sample submissions or, you know, I was going to ask about the awnings too. There's no other changes. We're just clarifying the color from last time, it not being so red. No further comment.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
Woodfield, thank you for supplying the color samples. They make all the difference in the world. They are very reassuring. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Ms. Hamer?
No comment.
All right. I'm not going to go around a second time since there were no material comments added to record. I will open the floor for a motion.
Nagel.
Ms. Nagel, the floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve petition 2500-1975-COA for 322 West Broughton Street as the work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. The motion on the floor is to approve as is. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That petition is approved. Next item up on the agenda is item number 17, petition of Kern & Co., file number 25-002473 for a COA at 225 West River Street.
Thank you. This is Caitlin presenting the project. The applicant's requesting approval for alterations to the fenestration of the first floor of the front River Street elevation of the property at 225 West River Street, which would consist of the replacement of a window with a door and related work. So just a few images here is kind of from a further away perspective. It's the rightmost window we're in question here, and this is where we are, and then the closer up view. So some of this work is going to include the removal of this window configuration to turn it into a door, and the creation, it'd be similar to what's seen here on the main entry, and the creation of some brick steps that are similar to what you have there. So just to kind of show these existing and proposed plans. So obviously a contributing building, it was constructed in 1820 and then 1868, and is, you know, made up of three buildings with three and four story masonry buildings with first floor arched entrances with non-historic wood windows and doors. And then, so staff went through the Secretary of the Interior standards, found that for historic character, physical record, distinctive features, and deteriorated features, the standards were not met. The proposed scope of work would remove the granite base ledge to allow for the installation of a brick stairs to match those found on the other entrance. To meet the standard, the granite base should be retained in place with a new set of stairs added, incorporated in. The proposed replacement of the non-historic wood window with a wood door would meet the standard. For standards 9 and 10, new additions to not damage and new additions reversible. Staff found standards were not met to the proposed scope of work because it would remove that masonry granite base ledge to allow for the installation of new masonry stairs to match those found on the other entrance to meet the standard. Same as the other recommendation for the other standards would be to incorporate that into the new stairs. Aside from that, the commercial storefront standards, same, just if the original storefront material and or configuration is unknown, new storefront material and configuration should be based on historic context, or if it is known, that shall be repaired rather than replaced. So that for that standard to be met, that would just include the same recommendation, all touching on the same standards there. So with that, staff found that otherwise it did meet the standards for the materials and, you know, the new configuration otherwise. So to be approved, the alterations to the fenestration of the first floor of the front elevation of the property at 225 West River Street with the following condition, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, retain the existing masonry base ledge and add masonry stairs as needed to provide access to West River Street with the final design coordinated and approved by staff prior to construction taking place. Thanks, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff on this one?
Woodfield, just a detail. So are you thinking that the brick stairs are in front, sidewalk side of the ledge? The ledge stays as it is existing uncovered, and the stairs are in front of it, or they go over it?
I think if it could remain intact, that might be something that the design team could explore.
Thank you.
Any additional questions?
Nigel, I have a question. If they do leave the granite and try to incorporate the stairs to meet code, which that would be, you know, a whole other thing, will the building have the requirement then to have an ADA accessible ramp at that point? I mean, are they, like, once they're changing the front into being an egress, an entry, are they required to then add ADA, or they could just add the steps?
I think it would just be to add the steps. It looks like, let's see. I don't think there was anything on the plans about having the ADA inclusion on that part of it, but.
Normally when we approve something like that, like adding an entry where there isn't currently one, is there anything that comes with that where they have to add the ramp?
That would not be our purview.
So if we approve it without the ramp, then the city has to approve it. And so it could come back.
It could be another department that may, a city department that may, but for the design purposes, yeah, if that were to alter it dramatically, then yes, we would.
It would have to come back.
Bring
and
it
then,
back. Mm-hmm.
Because it would have, okay, a ramp. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Are there any additional questions for Caitlin? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Is it Daniel?
Yeah, Danielle Edwards.
Okay. Daniel, you're self-muted.
Can you hear me now?
We can. Can you please just say your name for the record?
Yes. My name is Daniel Edwards. I work for Conant Company.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. Were you able to hear questions for staff?
Yes.
Do you have a presentation prepared, or would you rather just open it up for questions?
I'll just open up a question. So I was going to answer the question about the ADA ramp, though. That building already has ADA access to the side, so we don't have to worry about ADA for that portion at all.
And before we open it up to questions, were you did you have time to review the staff recommendation, and are you okay with the recommendation?
Correct. So we just finalized the design. And right now the landlord is actually looking at it for review. But what we're going to do is, it looks like the existing area, they added a step below So what we're going to do is add a step below the stone ledge, and then if possible, we can cover the stone ledge with brick veneer. That way we won't remove the stone ledge, but we'll just use it as part of our design, and that's the easiest way we are thinking about doing it. And per dimensions, it looks like the stairs might be up to code, but we'll just use the let the contractor field verify to make sure.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Edwards. Are there questions for the petitioner?
And Nagel, so you're saying that you would cover, like if you were to go with the staff recommendation, mm-hmm. you would just cover the granite. You wouldn't
Correct.
Actually leave it intact. You would just cover it with brick.
Correct. And just to match the existing, because it'll look kind of weird when we have that just granite stairs by itself. So if it's permits, we can just cover it with the brick to match the existing.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner?
Woodfield, I'm again kind of trying to clarify whether it's acceptable that the granite ledge be covered, or if staff is recommending we leave the ledge intact and visible and only add brick to the face of it, so we're not disturbing the granite itself.
That is correct. Yeah, that was the staff recommendation, just based on the Secretary of the Interior standards and the storefront design standards for historic buildings, was to not conceal it.
Okay, so just leave it open. Okay, that's fine with me. I'm pretty sure they'll be fine with the landlord. I'll go back and discuss with him if he's okay with that.
Thank you.
Nagel, I have one more question. What is the door going to look like? I mean, you're saying it's going to look exactly like the three doors down door. Is there anything in the submittal packet that actually shows us like the actual door other than the elevation we're looking at right now, which?
So it's a custom made door, but it's going to at least try to look exactly as the existing door looks like.
Okay, so there's nothing in the submittal packet that actually has the door?
No. Because it's a custom-made door, so that's something that they'll have to custom made and field verify from Savannah Millwork.
Right. I would think that if there's a submittal for a window to become a door, that we could actually see the door. So I just was wondering if there was a rendering or a drawing of the door or sample or anything. Thank you.
I think she's provided the actual fenestration and dimensions for the door, and then probably didn't provide a rendering because they're going to design it to look just like that other one. So I would just look at that, the design of that other door.
I just think it's hard to approve a door when we're not seeing the door. We're just seeing it like this is what it could look like and this is what it would look like, but we're not seeing the door that's being put in.
And when they're custom, they don't have the spec ahead of time, like the actual, like a picture, like if somebody was getting like Marvin Ultimate or something, they'd have that with the submittal. But that is something they can certainly present and send back to us prior to the project. We can look at it. That's usually, you know, when we go to stamp drawings, we check for those kind of things to make sure it's, you know, it's not like something other than what's presented.
Were there any additional questions for the petitioner? All right, at this time, we'll enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
No comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
My comment would be to keep the slab, but extend that level out another couple feet, because actually I've nearly had an accident in that type of doorway right there. And when you come out the door of a dark room and you come out to the sun, you know, you should step onto something for a second, and you can't do that with just a short little thing. So when they design it, you keep the slab but extend it out at that level, and then put the stairs in if they can do
that.
That
would
be my comment.
There'll be a small vestibule there as well, so that would actually leave it better.
Sorry, we're in board discussion, so you don't have to respond. These are just comments for the record. Mr. Thompson, was that the conclusion of your comment?
Yeah, I guess I should have brought that up earlier, but
that's
no,
okay.
That's it.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
I would just add that if the recommendation would be to leave the slate not concealed, then that just has to be clarified, I guess, at the level of the motion. Other than that, no comment.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. I will not go around a second time for comment, but we'll open the floor for a motion.
I move that the Savannah Historic Board of Review approve the petition of 2500-2473 COA with the following condition, because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance. The condition is to retain the existing granite base ledge and add masonry stairs as needed to provide access to West River Street with the final design coordinated and approved by staff prior to construction taking place.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. The motion on the floor is to approve with the outlined staff condition to retain the existing masonry step and come back and coordinate final approval at the staff level. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Thank you. The ayes have it. That application is approved. Next item up on the agenda is item number 18, petition of Shaha Architecture, Mr. Jerry Lominack, file number 25-002577 for a COA at 443 Montgomery Street.
Thank you. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the request to install an ADA compliant ramp with a railing on the front of the building located at 443 Montgomery Street. So just to give some context of what we're talking about, this building was constructed in 2005 and is non-contributing. This is the area where it will be. You'll notice there's a very ornate railing on the front of the design, and so rather than compete with it, the proposal is to just have a very simplistic design right here and to be the railing for the ramp. I'll do a little closer view here of the, so that garden area where we looked at, this is not on the sidewalk. This is the surrounding area. You'll see more modern buildings. There's a church directly across from the church parking lot. Just some of the surrounding context. Site plan, that's where this work is being proposed. Just you can see this design here and the detail of the curb that would be installed for this. Overall, staff found that for the most part, this met the standards. The inclusion of the ADA ramp is on a block that consists of either new construction next door and the First Tabernacle Missionary Baptist Church and parking lot across the street. Although there is not a high volume of contributing resources in the view shed of this building, the presence of the ramp is integrated in a way that can remain visually compatible. For the porch standards, one of the standards is that balusters shall be placed between upper and lower rails and the distances shall not exceed 4 inches on center. The height of the railing shall not exceed 36 inches for single and two family dwelling units. There are no balusters proposed at this time. Staff recommends they are added and meet that standard. And then the standard is met for the 3 feet height. For mechanical equipment and refuse, there is a gas meter that's currently on the front of the building. The gas company will be moving it to a side or rear elevation. They make the decision on that, but either way, that will meet the standard that it's on a secondary or rear facade and minimally visible from view. So with that,
Staff recommendation is to approve the request to install an ADA ramp on the front elevation of the property located at 443 Montgomery Street with the following condition to be submitted to and approved by staff prior to starting the work. Because the project is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards, which is to add the balusters to the railings spaced no more than 4 inches on center. Thanks, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff on this item?
Woodfield, is there anything in the Secretary of State's standards about rails that are not required? I mean, I know an ADA rail is required if you have a ramp, but normally the 4 foot on center picket is if the rail is 36 inches above the ground. Well, I just want to make the distinction between,
since
this is not a safety rail, this is.
So this is not a historic building, so we wouldn't apply those standards, but just for the general design standards for the porch, it does say shall. So that was how we were interpreting it, is just that if there are railings, they shall have balusters placed between the upper and lower rails.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions for staff?
This is Coleman. I want to clarify that the railings you're asking for are on the ramp rail, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record?
I'm Jerry Lominack. I'm senior architect with Shaw Architecture and Interiors. This is a very small project. Sometimes small projects give you the greatest challenge. This project actually did get a good bit of attention in our office because we went all the way from duplicating the very ornate balustrade on the existing porch of the two buildings, and seemed pretty overwhelming, to say the least. And we looked at wood railings with balusters, and they got kind of strange next to the very ornate rail. And we did look at duplicating the same treatment as the rail on the balcony that's on the side of the building, which is a very simple metal rail. And we looked at one that simply met the ADA requirements for a handicap ramp. And as we analyzed it, it seemed that that was the least noticeable and took away less from the overall composition of the pair of duplicate buildings that are there. And it seemed like the appropriate design decision to make from an aesthetic standpoint to the firm. And we would like for you to consider doing that. If not, we certainly will be very willing to work with staff to reach a conclusion that is satisfactory to both the staff and to us and to the owner. But I would like consideration of using the simple handicap ramp, since this is, the ramp at highest point is only 17 inches above grade. So it's almost a sidewalk. It just seemed appropriate to us from a design standpoint.
Thank you, Mr. Lominack. Are there questions for the applicant?
Woodfield? Sorry, I always like the details. So if we look at the detail, I think it's down a little bit on this sheet. You're proposing a metal edging on the concrete. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And so
that is to provide the little curb that's required on an ADA ramp, to prevent the wheel from rolling off of the side of the ramp. So it does require a small curve by ADA requirements.
So it's just like 1 or 2 inches that the metal is sticking up and you're calling that a curb? Right. And then the rail will be inside of that?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And is it going to grade this metal? Is it going to grade?
The ramp?
The metal. You're calling it out like 10 inches, I think.
You're talking about the metal edge?
Yes.
It goes all the way down to the whole ramp.
To the ground, the whole diagonal
slice
of the ramp. Okay, and that will be painted the brick color or something?
It is in one of the notes. So we would propose to paint both the rail and that the same color as the existing ornate rail.
Okay. And then you're also proposing to put, I think, 4 inches of concrete on top or brick on top of the existing stoop.
Yes.
Right? So you could be up to the level of the door.
That we need to raise the stoop by 4 inches to be level with the interior of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And we are setting it back behind that existing balustrade so that we can continue the continuity of it with the other one and still meet the requirements.
You know, that edge of it, so it's concrete, is that correct? Is it concrete that you're...
No, it's brick.
It's brick. So you've got a 2.5-inch, 4-inch brick, whatever you're doing.
Oh, you mean behind the thing? That would be concrete. Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. I misunderstood you.
I'm getting at the concern that we don't see a very industrial, unfinished edge of that 4 inches that you're adding on top of the stoop.
I mean, it could be brick if that would, like, if that would be what somebody would want. It wouldn't be a problem to do that.
You know, my concern is we don't have enough detail here to sort of understand what you're really doing and that it will look like it's properly incorporated. You know, that 4 inches of concrete on top of the stoop and how it's finished to blend with the existing brick face of the stoop.
The balustrade is there is very non-transparent almost. It's hard to see through it. It's a very dense composition of the existing balusters on the stoop. In reality, I don't think you would even notice it walking by.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Lominak. I don't have any speaker cards. Do we have anyone virtually?
No.
Thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Mr. Coleman.
My comment is that I agree with the petitioner on the lack of having the balusters added to the rail. I think that difference between adding those and the more ornate of railings that are adjacent to it creates a very busy and really non-cohesive elevation there that I think would be more problematic than leaving it really minimalized. So that would be my only comment that I really would be more in favor of the simple version that's there.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Thompson?
Actually, I agree with that. I think it'll look, the building behind it will be seen through the non-baluster railing. So, you know, it's always a challenge to adapt older buildings to handicapped accessible. So this looks like it does a decent job.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Rowan?
I agree with the two previous comments.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Woodfield?
I appreciate the struggle you've gone through to come up with a design, and I'm happy you tried some alternatives. I really don't know where the Secretary of State recommendation of shall have more balusters play into this. I don't believe it should be as ornate as the existing. I don't believe it should be a lot of 4-inch on center vertical pickets. You know, I just wonder if there's another rhythm that looks a little more sympathetic to the existing rail with a little different rhythm of vertical, but not every 4 inches. But I appreciate that you don't want this to be a feature in itself. It's usually something you want to recede into the background.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Helms?
I agree with Petitioner, Mrs. Chedrick and Thompson, that the simplest design is probably the best, and I would recommend approving this without conditions.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Hamer?
I also agree with the petitioner. However, my concern is with the current design, it is presenting rather utilitarian, and if the petitioner would explore maybe more decorative profiles for the handrail and the balusters so it doesn't appear as utilitarian, I think that would be effective for compatibility. And then I also agree with Ms. Woodfield. I think that the petitioner needs to resolve the slab edge at the where he's overpouring at the concrete stoop so that you do not see an exposed concrete slab edge behind the railing. So either, I guess, use the metal, painted metal, or use a brick detailing there so you cannot see the concrete edge. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. I'll go around one more time. Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No additional comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No additional comments.
Ms. Rowan?
No additional comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
No additional comments.
Mr. Helms?
I actually agree with Ms. Hamer that the detailing on the slab should be brick and not concrete.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Hamer?
No further comment.
At this time, I will open the floor for a motion.
Coleman, I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve the petition of COA 205-002577-COA for 443 Montgomery Street with the following condition, because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance. And the condition I would add rather than the one here is that the petitioner resolve the porch edge for the additional concrete for review by staff prior to final approval.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. The motion on the floor is to approve with an added condition that the petitioner work with staff before final approval to reconcile the addition of the concrete porch slab, the detailing of the concrete porch slab. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Thank you. The ayes have it. That petition is approved with condition. Next item up on the agenda is the petition of Pantheon ADC for file number 25-002579 for a COA at 325 East Bay Street, alterations and additions.
Afternoon, this is Kelly again. So the applicant is requesting approval of rehabilitation alteration work as well as the construction of an addition at 325 East Bay Street. So again, among the work being proposed is the removal of an existing addition on top of the one-story portion of the building and the construction of a new addition that's slightly larger in size. You can see the existing addition right here in the upper photo. So that will be completely removed and replaced with the addition that is shown on the lower right-hand corner.
The Sanborns do show some form of bump out or addition in the same general location as the existing addition, but staff does not believe what is there now is historic or original, or if it is original, it's been heavily altered based on the materials that are present. What is being proposed, staff finds to meet the standards overall. Our primary concern with this portion of the project is that the roof pitch be altered to meet the standards. According to the plans, it had a pitch of 1.4 over 12. It should be a minimum of 2.12 pitch. The applicant is also proposing alterations to the window and door openings on this one-story portion of the building. So as you can see between the existing photo and then what's proposed, the door is being shifted and also windows being shifted. This portion of the building is listed as non-contributing, so there is more flexibility in what can be done here. And overall, staff find that this met the standards, given that the opening sizes will be relatively the same and given that alterations have already been made to this portion of the building. So other proposed work on this elevation, as well as on the rear elevation, includes the installation of an awning that will continue the one that's currently installed, the installation of wood windows on the existing three-story portion of the building, the opening of two windows that were previously enclosed, that is on the rear portion of the building, paint touch-ups, and the moving of some mechanicals to an area that won't be visible or minimally visible. Staff found that these elements do meet the standards and are visually compatible. There will be some work done on the primary facade as well. This work will include proposing window replacement, the removal of an awning-type element that you see right here. That is likely not historic. Paint touch-ups, as well as the replacement of this gate that's currently there as well. Again, staff finds that this work meets the standards and is visually compatible. The applicant did provide a submittal packet after the final staff report was issued. That packet does provide additional information that addresses staff concerns that was part of the was placed on the agenda as well. So with that, staff recommends approval of the proposed rehab and alteration work, as well as construction of an addition at 325 East Bay Street with the conditions seen on the screen. Again, that supplemental packet does address those conditions that came in after the final was published.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff on this application?
Just to clarify, the additional submission provided what you needed for all three of these conditions?
Yes, sir. We did review it, but it came in yesterday, so we couldn't update the staff report.
So the current staff recommendation would be to approve it as proposed?
Yes, approve it as proposed with those three conditions. Again,
those three conditions met?
Yeah, like they are currently met, but again, since the staff report was already issued when that came in.
Right, so for the purposes of a motion, we just use the approve as presented.
Yes, sir.
Whitfield, did you have a comment about the metal gate? I thought I saw that somewhere, that it was very vague, and that you asked, or that it came up that you needed more information, or we need more information.
Not that I remember. I may have forgotten to address it in the conditions. So if you do have concerns, though, feel free to address it and put in the conditions as well.
I just have a question, and Kelly, this may not be for you. It might be for you, Pam, just procedurally, since our approvals or motions are based on the staff report. It would have to, since the staff report that is presented and that we were reviewing on contained those conditions, even if the applicant addresses those in their presentation, would we have to acknowledge that those conditions have been met, or we can approve it without condition?
We can approve it without conditions because the staff report always says unless other information is obtained before the meeting.
Okay.
And it should be at the end of the staff report.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sorry, any other questions for staff?
Yes. Was there a comment made about windows on the rear? Were those existing openings that are being opened back up?
Yes, for sure. Let me pull up the application real quick. Did not include a photo of that. Yeah, so these are the two windows that will be reopened. They were clearly enclosed at some point. So they would keep it at the same size and just put wood windows in them. Any other questions?
Helms, are they visible from anywhere?
These ones, not that I could see, so I visited site while reviewing it. I could not see them, so if they are, it's very minimal at best.
Anything additional for staff? Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hello. Hello, my name is Caitlin Corliss. I'm an architect at Pantheon. And just to review our supplemental information, we plan to comply with the original comments of the staff report. And the intent is to keep the look of the front windows the same. So we would either relocate that first window and door or provide new to match the aesthetic and colors. And then the signage comment on the front windows, that would be coordinated with the owner to provide the staff more information. And then in regards to the roof of the addition pitch increasing to 212 minimum, we discussed it with the clients and decided to switch the material as well to a standing seam metal roof because it feels a little more appropriate. If the slant is going to increase, it's going to be a little bit more visible from the Bay Street side. And so we would just go ahead and take the opportunity to match the roof that's on the other side of the existing building. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Corliss. Are there questions for the applicant? Did Muriel Hamer here, did you address the gate?
Sorry, yes. The gate will be replaced with cast iron. So, again, kind of replacing in kind with what's there.
Thank you.
Woodfield, so the current gate is pickets with some wood behind it. Is it going to be a solid metal panel?
We can explore options with staff and find something appropriate, but the materiality will stay the same, and then there will be a panic device as well to use exterior egress from that courtyard. That's the intent.
I think, you know, it's a bit of a concern that it's a big utility zone there.
Right.
But it's also part of that elevation and right next to the stairs.
Right. Our so client would prefer closed off, I believe, opaque.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Closed off, but I'm also just saying that it is attractive. You know, it is still part of the elevation. It's not on a lane. It's part of that elevation.
Sure.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Ms. Corliss.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone virtually that wishes to comment? I don't have any comment cards either. So at this point, we'll enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Hamer, I'll start with you.
My only comment is I think that the applicant should provide an elevation of the gate for staff to review.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
No comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
I have a question. For the AC units that are being relocated from the back addition, where are those being placed?
Well, I understand they're placed on the roof system itself on that one-story portion.
Is that going to have any enclosure, or is it going to be?
Not that I'm aware of, but staff determined that they'll be minimally visible, so we weren't concerned about that. But the board determines that you want screening, that's to be placed as a condition.
Okay, thank you.
I'll go around one more time, Ms. Hamer.
No further comment.
Mr. Helms?
No.
Ms. Woodfield?
None.
Ms. Rowan? Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
At this time, I will entertain a motion.
I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve the petition of Pantheon AVC 25002579 COA for 325 East Bay Street. As submitted, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. The motion on the floor is to approve as submitted without condition. Is there a second?
Coleman second.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Hamer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is approved. Next item up on the agenda is item number 20, the petition of Hanson Architects for file number 24-004416 for a COA for 401 through 409 East Bay Street. It's being presented as an amendment to an existing COA that carries file number 24-004416.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. I know we had looked at the model during the pre-meeting, but I'm going to pass it around again because I know Mr. Coleman would like to also show it to you. But if anybody also wanted to see it again, we're going to pass it around. And you'll see there's a supplemental piece to it. That was the prior approved, and then the current approved is what's affixed to the model. So the applicant is requesting approval of amendments to the previously approved rehabilitation and new construction project at 401 through 409 East Bay Street. Amendments include the following. Revision of the first floor plan, relocating guest rooms of the upper floors and increasing the size of the lobby and hotel amenities. This has changed the fenestration patterns to the second and third floor rooms have been enlarged and reconfigured, also changing the fenestration patterns. Third one would be a fourth floor has been added to the addition on the contributing building with a gabled roof concealing the mechanical equipment. The addition is set back 3 feet from the stories below on the North Bay Street and the South Bay Lane facades, and 6'8" from the ground floor contributing building at the South Lane facade. The facade of the addition has changed from large windows and metal panel to smaller punched openings and a metal panel, as you can see in these illustrations. A glass and metal panel fourth floor penthouse addition has been added to the lane building. The addition is set back 6'8" from the lane and 9'6" from the eastern property line. The roof of the lane building has changed from a gable roof with dormers to a flat roof. The cementitious siding has been changed to stucco and a flat roof. And then the Habersham Street side has been modified. The upper floor window configuration has been modified to align with the floor plan changes. The ground floor entry on Habersham Street has been redesigned with a terracotta band shroud and flanking side windows. And the water table separating the first and second floor has been updated to include terracotta detailing. So just a little project history. Part one, height and mass, was approved on September 11th of 2024, with the HGBR decision being to approve the request as requested because the work was visually compatible and meets the standards. And then part two, design details, was approved at the November 13th, 2024 HGBR meeting, where again the approval came as requested for the same reasons for meeting the standards. So regarding the preservation brief, 14 new exterior additions to historic buildings, and in this case, the applicant has named these A, B, and C. So we're talking about B, the middle one. This is the only one that's contributing. The one next to it is non-contributing, and this is new construction. So for building B, the applicant proposes to add that now three-story addition, four-story addition towards the rear of the contributing building on site B. The addition would connect the rear addition to site A, where this would not be possible for access in the existing historic building. The design of the addition is differentiated from the historic structure in a way that would not allow for confusion or misinterpretation that the addition was an original part of the building. The form of the building will remain intact. The addition would be installed through the flat roof, which is not visible from a public right-of-way. The design is compatible yet differentiated from the historic building in the use of different materials. The front elevation of Building B is arguably the most significant as it faces Bay Street and is in better condition than the rear facade. By placing the addition at the rear, it keeps the front elevation features undisturbed. The rear facade has been altered multiple times and is in a state of deterioration. And then as noted, the rear roof addition is placed in an area where the least amount of historic material and character defining features would be affected. For the Secretary of the Interior Standards, with regard to the only historic building in the in this row, the inclusion of the extra story of the addition will not affect the previously approved intent to rehabilitate and restore the building with in-kind materials. For new additions to not damage, the addition would be installed on the rear of the roof of the building, which has been approved previously. It is differentiated from the old, as noted. The only area where this may not be the case is the height, but due to being set back from the front of the building and based on the perspective street views, it would not overpower the front facade, even with the additional story. And then for new additions reversible, the addition would be installed in a way that maintains the form of the historic building, so it appears it could be removed while maintaining the essential form and integrity of the historic building. With regard to height, the height map says up to four stories are allowed, which is how this was initially approved here, this building A. For building B, the addition, being only partial and situated towards the rear of the roof area, allows for a degree of visual compatibility with the height of the historic building it is attached to, though taller than the other contributing buildings on the block. As with site A, which was noted, the elevation drawings illustrate how the proposed amended design would still work within the existing context. For site C, though taller than other contributing buildings on the block, as with A and B, the updated elevation drawings illustrate how the proposed design would work within the existing context. Both sites will maintain heights that do not exceed the four-story maximum and that do not exceed the height of site A, which helps maintain the visual compatibility. Since site B and site C have new construction set back from the front facade, this helps maintain the visual compatibility by not overtaking the existing one-story buildings as if it were on the entire building. For the proportion of openings and the rhythm of solids to voids in front facades, staff found the standards were still met with the changes, though the window configurations have been modified. In some instances, the proportions are still balanced and compatible. The same is true for the rhythm of the structures. As noted in earlier sections, due to being set back, sites B and C maintain a rhythm that does not overpower the existing building and will not appear to cause an incompatible view from the street or the lane. And then with relationship to materials, textures, and colors, the standard is met and the proposed materials for the amendment are the same as all were previously approved. They are just in other areas of the buildings to be based off of the changes. We do have the material panels if anybody needed a reminder or refresher on which had been previously approved, we have them available. Otherwise, staff recommends approve the requested amendments for the previously approved project at 401-409 East Bay Street as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you. I will be happy to take your questions or hand over to the applicant.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff on this?
Hamer, is this project required to meet the large scale development standards?
It's actually below the square footage.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Woodfield?
Yeah, give us a second as we're...
Take your time.
I just wanted to inquire if there are any conditions about the back lane you know, this is putting a lot of vertical building right on what is, you know, a very small back lane facing residential, and there's no setback, just a little bit maybe where that existing facade is. But this is my concern. It's putting a whole building on the lane. Is there anything in the ordinance?
We found, I mean, staff found in the original part one and part two that, I guess mostly with the height and mass in part one, those were met. I mean, it's kind of being built within the existing conditions, because for the two existing buildings that are getting the additions, those are within the footprint of what exists, and this isn't within that plane as well. And we found that was still the case with this. But, you know, that's certainly something if you also wanted to check with the petitioner and get any more clarity. But that was our staff findings on that.
I have just a general feeling that the changes here are significant enough that they really kind of void the original approval, that we ought to be reconsidering whether the height and mass are visually compatible now that we've added a full story plus changed the roof outline so that it's going to read like a four-story building on a lane that has very little. The only other four-story building will be the thing that's next to it.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that's a fair assessment. When we received this as an amendment and staff met previously to the applying of the amendment, you know, I think it seemed that because, so, you know, obviously the height is changing, there's some fenestration patterns changing, but that overall this would still be seen as an amendment held to the same review as it would be, just relevant to what's changing. So that was why it didn't come back in as a brand new part one. I don't know if that's exactly what you were.
Yeah, my issue is whether or not we should be asking them to come back with a part one.
We had not considered that.
Chair.
Mr. Coleman.
I want to follow up with Ms. Pines, because that was exactly where I am with this. I don't consider this as an alteration. As an architect, this is a new building for me. And for it to be an alteration, it's well beyond alteration standards. So I raised that same concern of being comfortable with looking at this original design and looking at what's here and considering that this is an alteration of a design that is clearly a different massing. It has, I don't have a problem with the design, but I have a problem with how it's being presented as an alteration.
Yeah, and I think for clarification with, you know, the public and fellow board, it's something that we discussed in pre-meeting. When an application comes as an amendment, the checklist that applies with the required documentations and submittal packet is lighter. So they don't have to submit all of the same documentations and the full checklist for part one when it comes in as an amendment. So, you know, we can talk about this in board discussion if we want to send them back or continue it to allow them to present all of the documentation at a later date. But again, we can ask the applicant, you know, what they would be willing to do, and then we can talk about what we want to do in board discussion. Were there other questions for Caitlin? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, everybody. Patrick Phelps with Hanson Architects. I'm the applicant, representing Garage Gap as the owner and developer of the project. Thank you for your consideration today. Caitlin, thank you for your report. I think it clearly outlines that the changes that were made pretty much are status quo to the ordinance, and that she has the review of it with the changes. Those are in compliance as well. I'd just like to take some more time to kind of run through everything so we have an understanding of what the changes were that we've made. And then certainly I think there's some discussion to be made about procedure. Thank you, Tom. Better. Everybody hear me now?
Yep. Yep.
Thank you. Okay. All right. So on Bay Street, I'm just going to kind of work left to right. And if I need to increase this for visibility, I can do that. But probably best to see both of them in the same image. At the top of the page is going to be the previously approved and all the slides. And down at the bottom of the page is going to be the proposed changes. Again, I'd like to reiterate that the changes were made because we're looking at enlarging guest room size, building a better product, and also adding more guest amenities and public amenities. We're not looking at trying to squeeze in more rooms with the additional floors or increase the capacity of the hotel. So all those issues of parking and impact to the neighborhood are same as the previous approval. So on the Bay Street side, I'm going to refer to these from left to right as the non-contributing existing building, the contributing building in the center, and then the new building on the corner of Haversham and Bay. The non-contributing building, again, and if some of you weren't in the previous application, that was a building that we've evaluated. We feel that it does have historic value, even though it's not listed as a contributing building to the in the ordinance. So the plan is to really restore that as is, fully as an event space. It's an open warehouse space now with a nice clear story above it. That will be restored. There's an existing addition on the back of it that's non-contributing. It's concrete block. The plan is to demolish that and build a new structure along the lane. So the changes were originally there was a three-story wood structure, two stories with a gabled roof with dormers. We have changed that to a three-story building with an addition here that is set back from the neighboring contributing building to limit visibility from the neighboring courtyard, about 9.5 feet, and then also from the lane to limit its visibility from the lane and then the corner of Price and Bay Lane. We changed the materials of that to stucco because the roof configuration changed from pitched to flat roof, which would be more indicative of a masonry building and not a wood frame building. So with the stucco, we're looking at that as really being emulating a historic masonry building with a flat roof and then the penthouse in the back. Over the contributing building, originally we had a two-story addition onto it. The frontage of that was mostly glass. And then at the top of that, we had an equipment screen that was approximately 4 to 5 feet tall to conceal all the mechanical equipment. We've changed the language of that addition a little bit. We looked at just extending the glass facade, but felt that there was no break in the elevation. So we've created, mimicked the lane facade that was proposed in the original application to where a more solid metal panel with punched openings and created a glass clerestory. That glass clerestory is set back from the Bay Street elevation, approximately 4 feet, both on the front and on the lane elevation. And we've created a pitched roof to where we've tucked in the mechanical equipment. So it's not that we're adding a floor and then adding another level that would be visible with mechanical equipment. We've kind of compacted that all into one floor. And then on the new building, you can see just kind of reconfiguration of the window spacing. We're still aligned. We still have the same window proportions that were submitted in the initial application. We've just changed some of the layout based on the new rooms. And please, if there's, I guess you'll have discussion, but if there's any just questions as I'm going along, I know it's a lot of information. Here we're looking at Bay Street. So you can start to see a little change from the way that these buildings are set back. Again, I think staff made a great point about the preservation of both the non-contributing and the contributing buildings elevations from the street, that with the new additions that are pushed back and with the set and additional setbacks of the upper floors, that those are going to remain the prominent elevations on the street and visibility from Bay Street. Both walking down the main sidewalk and across the street on the north side of Bay. Along the lane, again, Haversham Street, those room configurations have changed, so we've modified the building to repeat what the layouts of those rooms are. We're still maintaining the setback of the two-story addition on the contributing building, and then you can see we've added that third-story addition for a total of four floors, set it back, and created that glass clear story so that it's even less visible from the lane. Again, that was an equipment yard before and had a 4 to 5 foot screen on it, so that would have been visible as well. And then you can see the laning building, the new construction in the back that we've changed, repeating that kind of third floor roof line. And from this angle, you can't see the fourth floor addition because it's set back from the lane and from the eastern side of the building. And again, that view from the lane, you know, previously we had a wood frame building, pitched roof with gables, which I will say not very typical in a downtown lane condition to have gabled roofs or dormers along the lane side. And this is kind of transitioning into a more commercial area. So we felt it appropriate to, when we captured the third floor and we're setting back the addition, that this become more of a flat roof and this be treated as a building that would have more of a masonry language. And then again, that fourth floor addition is really tucked back, so it limits visibility from the lane. Some other elevational changes. The ground floor entry on Habersham has been developed a little bit more. We're working through branding and interiors, and so we're kind of tying in that architectural element into the interior space, adding additional terracotta detailing on the exterior. And then again, this is going to show sort of the window configuration change due to the room layout. And just a couple of site sections. I think these are very informing. So again, upper is previous application. So if you were in the lane looking up, you would have visibility of this cornice line. And this is a section through the new building behind the non-contributing building. Structure. As we set back that addition, you can see that, you know, you're just going to be able to see this little pink area in between the two view lines as increased area. And then again, off of Bay Street, across the street, which is a very wide street, your view line would pick up here, and what's in pink would be what's now visible due to the changes. And this is a section through the three-story addition, or I'm sorry, two-story on the old application onto the contributing building and three-story on the lower level. And again, because of that setback with the clear-storied guest rooms level and the tucked-in mechanical, we've really not added that much visible space to the previous view corridor. As before, we did meet with neighborhood. We met with Historic Savannah Foundation, the Downtown Neighborhood Association, and neighbors that are adjacent to the lane on the property. I've gotten no dissenting comments, only supportive comments from those people. Everything that we've done is in compliance with the ordinance. The height map does allow for a four-story here. It even allows for the opportunity to request for a bonus floor. We have not done that. The non-contributing building, due to the ordinance, could have been asked for demolition. We have not done that. We're preserving it. And we've really kind of tried to reduce our footprint on the site and develop it as much as we can, but still staying visually compatible and respecting the neighbors on the lane and the non-contributing and existing contributing building. Procedurally, we met with staff and the preservation officer. We were advised that this would be an amendment, us understanding that there were some changes both in part one and part two. We've submitted a full revision of part one and part two application. There really were no changes to the part two materials. So that was very minimal. We've reapplied some of the materials, but we haven't changed the materials. So I feel like we've met the requirements of the ordinance. If there is changes made in the ordinance, I believe the path is to do an amendment and not to scrap the whole project, because we are making changes to a previously approved project. If this project was not developed and there's a new application with a whole new configuration, then that would be the time that it would have been resubmitted for part one and part two. We've not really changed the massing great enough, I believe, that it would substantiate a part one reapproval. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms.
Woodfield. Your question about the building on the corner of Haversham and Lane. There is a zero lot line setback that we were in compliance with, and this is a four-story height district, which we're in compliance with. Again, there is the ability in the ordinance to ask for a fifth bonus floor, which we have not done. So we're within the bounds of the ordinance as far as the location and the height of that structure. Happy to entertain any other questions.
Are there additional questions for Mr. Phelps? Do you have a question? Okay.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, thank you, Mr. Phelps.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I do have one speaker card for Ms. Ellie Isaacs.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC appreciates that the architect presented to our Architectural Review Committee prior to today's meeting. HSF's ARC would again like to be on record in full support of this project. We are still appreciative that no bonus stories are being requested and that the utmost care is being taken in designing this project. We believe that the revisions made to the height, mass, and design details remain visually compatible and respectful of neighboring buildings and their occupants.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Do we have anyone joining us virtually?
No, ma'am.
Thank you. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment? Noted. At this time, no further public comment will be heard, and we will enter into board discussion. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
I think the concern is definitely the amount of changes with the original part one by the setting a precedent of changing heights, especially with a fourth floor situation. Procedurally, I just don't know how the board would tackle that, because I just think that there's enough changes to, but does it have to be submitted all together again? That would open up, I think, a bigger problem, you know, on the side of the petitioner having to go back all the way. So I think there's a procedural issue here with that, how many changes there are, but that's, I'm sure there has to be, you know, if they are complying within the checklist, then that's it. So we could just look at it now and say, well, if the fourth floor on the lane is indeed allowed according to the ordinance and the height map, then, you know, I don't think that changes much. I think the biggest change is the one in the lane, the stucco building, the building with the stucco versus the siding, the dormers and all that. That is a completely different building. However, I happen to prefer, I think the second one actually fits in more with Elaine. I agree with the dormer situation not really being that visually compatible. So, I did have one question and I forgot to ask it, but I'll look it up. What is the height increase with the enclosed penthouse area versus what there was before? I think that would be the only question that I didn't ask before, but if it's not a significant height difference, I would not be opposed to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Coleman?
Yeah, I'm going to stay on my path that I think this is not a simple alteration, and we need to be careful on
well, that the floor heights are allowed. Well, just because something's allowed doesn't make it right. That's why we have a review process to make sure that, you know, whatever is allowed still complies with the visual and other parts of the ordinance. So while, as I said, I don't have a problem with the design of the building, I think it's attractive and what have you, I do not believe it's the same building and it's an alteration. So that remains my problem here more than anything, in that if I'm designing a building, since I'm an architect and I get an opportunity to do something like this and get my project approved and then decide that we're going to be able to make a change, I'm going to remember this as a part of that whole deal, that we are able to make changes to the mass of a building, height and mass, after a building's gone through this process. So I just think that there's a different way this could have been handled because of the amount of changes here. I don't buy alteration simply for what I see here.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Thompson.
Well, that was my first impression also, is that there were a lot of changes for quote unquote an amendment, and may set a precedent, I guess, but my thought in thinking about it's more in getting the presentation is that the process went through part one and part two and got approved, and what they're doing is amending it in a big way, but amending it, and also based on the staff's recommendations that the amendments all comply with ordinance and visual compatibility. So then I asked myself, what would I do differently with this if we went through it again? And my answer was I would approve it or vote to approve it. And so all that aside, we don't have to triple the process if it makes sense to move forward with something that complies that otherwise might be approved if it had gone through the way it did the first time. Although it is disturbing, there's major changes here, but all within purview of the ordinance. So
thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Owen?
I agree with Mr. Thompson's comments.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. I'm going to add just some thoughts for consideration of fellow board members. Since the applicant was advised to continue down the amendment pathway, one way we could look at this would be considering a full part one review versus the amendment. What additional information would you like to see that would make you more comfortable reviewing this as an amendment? If there was something that the applicant did not provide, like floor heights, that you would like to review in more detail, we could continue and provide them a list of items that we'd like them to come back to allow us to review, so that we're not sending them back to the beginning again. Just something for consideration. Ms. Woodfield, I'll pass on to you.
Woodfield, yes, thank you. The first application that was approved had a very long presentation on why you were selecting different fenestrations, glass, curtain walls, residential siding, and you know, I think it was very delicately worked out as a balance of, you know, these, it's really a very big facade. Yes, you've got it in three parts, but the corner lane on Habersham is, am I right? Habersham, right, is sort of the edge of, you know, the traditional larger buildings. It's all commercial. Abercorn is pretty much the edge of the really big buildings. And then now we're coming into a residential part of Bay Street. So, you know, it's certainly appropriate on the corner to have, and this is the ordinance, to have a four-story building. But when we get to the front elevation, you know, you're trying to keep the original buildings, which is, you know, we appreciate it. You don't have to keep all of them, but they do make it interesting. I think they are important to the cityscape here. But the way you dealt with the buildings beyond this facade, again, in the first presentation, you had this way of presenting it with the glass facade, so it wasn't a big mass that was visible on Bay Street because you're transitioning into a very low story commercial, but a lot of also residential. The rest of this block is residential, 2-3 story at the most. So that now becomes a big building back there. And then you have the next building over that was definitely stepped down in scale with the sloped roof and the finer grain of windows that looked, you know, more compatible with the next door contributing residential building. So, you know, I think you had a very fine crafted building here that did a lot of things. You got the very big building on the edge, and then you got these, you know, buildings back from the front street on the lane. But the lane is a little, you know, you're right up against the line of the residential section. Everything across the lane here is open space with carriage houses. And, you know, those are very old. This section is a very old part of Savannah. Some of the oldest houses are here, contributing buildings. So you're really changing the character of the lane. And because those buildings are so low, you know, the sight lines for the back are going to be longer than you're presenting. You know, that you will see over the existing buildings and see these big buildings from further away than you're presenting it. So on this left side, East Bay Lane, you know, you will see this from a lot of that neighborhood. There's a park, you know, just at the front side of this building here. So that's for me, I don't appreciate that you presented one rationale for the building and one set of materials and worked it. And, you know, we commented, maybe there was some refinement I'm not remembering, but, you know, it seemed to me to work very well. Now what I'm concerned about is that you're just coming in to maximize the height. And in order to maximize the height or the volume, you know, you're sort of giving up that relationship that you had established the first time around. And that is, again, with, you know, the views from Bay Street, keeping it simple, not making it a big wall of buildings, even though they're set back from the front, they're still going to be visible. That's a park across the way, long sight lines, and from the lane. And then also from the next door residence, you know, everything across the lane and again, next door on that same block are contributing residential buildings. So this is, you know, I think not as compatible and as respectful. And, you know, it's as the first design. And, you know, I'll speak again to the fact that fellow board members have said is that this feels like a switch. You know, we had a building, we approved it. Now you've come in to ask for more. And, you know, that's a bad precedent. It does make a difference. And then I also want to comment that I think you are introducing people on these roofs. So, you know, this penthouse on the roof, it looks like it's a balcony that people can get up to. I hope it's not a party balcony because those are very disruptive in these residential neighborhoods. But, you know, that wasn't in the original design, and now you're presenting it something which appears to be presenting light, noise, people, you know, up above this quiet residential neighborhood. So I'll leave it at there. I have a few more comments the next time around.
We look forward to them. Mr. Helm.
Hi. I have basically two problem areas. One is, like Mr. Shedrick, that this feels a lot like a bait and switch. And that it's a very different building than was presented before. The second problem I have is that we're talking about putting four-story buildings on lanes. And most lanes have two-story buildings, and we're actually, you know, resisting putting a third story or having too many third-story, three-story buildings on lanes. And now we've got a four-story building on a lane. And what was proposed originally was a three-story building. I don't have a particular problem with the stuff that's on Habersham and Bay, because there are quite a lot of fairly big buildings on Habersham and Bay. My problem really is in the stuff that's behind buildings A and buildings B, which are materially bigger than they were in the original thing. And I wonder if they would have been approved in the original thing. So I'm inclined to think that maybe they wouldn't have been approved in the original, because they were, you know, they're meaning they're a story bigger than they were before. And we're talking about stuff that's on the lane. It's not on a major street. And that's a material difference to me.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Hamer?
So to kind of add on to similar sentiments, I also agree that I feel like we need a little more information. It's kind of hard to discern how these buildings are composed without seeing scaled elevations and sections with dimensions. I do appreciate the applicant putting together the before and after so we can clearly see what it's been being proposed is different from what was originally proposed. That's very helpful. However, we now, due to the diagram we, the applicant showed with us earlier, it is clear that there is going to be a significant, that the proposed additions to, I think, site B and site C, the two existing buildings, are going to be readily visible now from Bay Street. And I think that we need to better understand the scale of those buildings through dimensioned elevations and sections, and not via perspective. Additionally, just to kind of comment on the design, I do feel that the way the buildings are meeting the alley in this proposed amendment is more successful than the original proposed application, where you've got a setback and it's appearing more like a three-story buildings than the four-story proposed buildings back there. However, my greatest concern is the new visibility from Bay Street, where you've got the large sections of glass that kind of aren't as horizontally proportional to the solid facades. The gable kind of appears to be floating. And it seems it's a pretty atypical condition, and it's not visually compatible with the existing historic building, which is pretty utilitarian and industrial. And then the glass penthouse appears to be, and again, it's kind of hard to tell from perspective, but the scale of it seems to almost be the same size as the proposed addition to that building. So it's kind of hard, again, to discern what is being proposed from just looking at it from perspective. So I think it would be really helpful to see some elevations and sections of like is required in part one for this amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. I'll go around one more time. Ms. Nagel?
No further comment.
Mr. Coleman?
I have no other comment.
Mr. Thompson?
Same comments as before.
Ms. Rowan?
No additional comments.
Ms. Woodfield?
Woodfield. So I think trying to wrap this up and find out how to move forward, you know, there is the procedural question of do we just ask for a revision as a continuing item and give as much guidance as we can about what we would approve. I don't think I'm comfortable approving this now. I am not comfortable approving this now. I do think it's a very different building than what we had. I do think that the B and C buildings are the problem in that they've changed so much, and the relationship with the, you know, the existing buildings all around it is not as compatible, and that it's definitely too large for facing a lane in this, you know, this area. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Helms.
Just reiterating that when you look at the Bay Street North elevation, those two, if you wish, backlocked buildings behind the low elevation fronts are now the same size as the corner buildings and the buildings on Habersham and Bay. And I just think they're too tall. I don't think they're visually compatible with what's behind them, what's to the side of them. I don't think that they would probably have been approved if they'd been done last time. So if we continue it, I think they should look at that, the height of those two add-on buildings.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Hamer?
No further comment.
All right. At this time, I will open the floor for a motion.
I'm going to step forward and make a motion.
The floor is yours.
Woodfield, thank you. I move that we, I'm going to put this in two parts, and maybe we didn't discuss this, but I move to approve the requested changes to the corner building, which I believe is 401 and 405, for the project of applicant Patrick Phillips amendment to 24-004416 COA. So again, approve the requested amendments for the corner building, 401 to 405. But move to continue the requested amendments for the previously approved project at 407 and 408, which I believe, please correct me if I'm wrong, are the buildings we've been referring to as B and C, because the work is visually incompatible, and it's the additions on the back, on the lane side.
I'll second.
Okay, just... give me a second to summarize what we're doing here.
What happened to 409?
Yeah. It's not 408, it's 409.
409.
So we're approving 401 and 405, and then what, I need clarification of the addresses.
And Ms. Woodfield said 408. I think she meant to say 409.
Okay. So which is what? The corner building is 409.
Which
nine.
Is the corner building,
this 401.
This is 401.
401's on building A, the rightmost.
Okay. And then building B is what?
Is that 405? The addresses are kind of crossed between the properties and combined. So I don't know if you want to say it out like building A, building B.
We're going to need to amend the motion. I would refer to the buildings as A, B, and C as submitted.
And remember, this one's A, this one's B, this one's C.
I would just say that you wish to amend your motion.
I wish to amend my motion so it's clear which buildings I'm speaking about. So I move to approve the requested changes on building A, which is the corner building, but continue the requested amendments on buildings B and C. Because the work is visually incompatible.
Okay, so the amended motion on the floor is to approve the application pertaining to building A and continue the portion of the application dealing with building B and C to allow the applicant to address compatibility concern. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Can I have a clarification on B and C?
Sure.
So, the one historic, the other building. What about the buildings behind it? Is that part of B and C?
Correct.
Okay. Nay.
Ms. Rowan?
Nay.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. Again, for clarification of record, petition pertaining to building A is approved. Building B and C are continued.
Give a date certain for the continuance.
What's the date?
July 9th.
To the July 9th. Buildings B and C are continued to the July 9th meeting to allow the applicant to address visual compatibility concerns. Okay, that concludes the regular agenda. Approved staff reviews, as we recall, are now posted online. Work performed without a certificate, there were none this month. Notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. There's the inspections and stamp drawings report. We do have some other business. Pam, I think you wanted to recognize some changes in staff.
I did, and then I was told to hold up, but since we're putting it out there.
Sorry.
Next meeting.
Sure.
Okay.
I take that back. Is there any other business for the good of the order, Mr. Thompson?
Yes, I brought this up with Caitlin earlier today. On the staff reviews or the staff approvals, when you go and look at them, I really need to have the submittal package to really understand what they're signing off on. So if they could, I assume the submittal package are submitted like all the others electronically, yes. Right? So it's a matter of attaching it to the approval. So I request that, like when I look at it, I can
see what you're
have a
looking
better
at.
Sense of what I'm monitoring, I guess, because we're not approving.
Got it. Yeah. Caitlin, is that?
We can discuss. I think historically we hadn't done it because just with the ordinance being written that we would do it, like certain things were allowed to be approved by staff as a decision, not a recommendation. And we had not attached them previously to the agenda either, but we can discuss.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, item for discussion.
We'll discuss it and let
you know. Okay, we'll carry it over and cover it in business next meeting. Anything else? All right, the next meeting of this board is Wednesday, July 9th at 1 p.m. in this very spot. We are adjourned.